Hello and welcome to Behind the Biology, brought to you by ATCC. I'm your host, Dave Yarmush, and this is our first episode in our series with Nick Greenfield, founder and board chair of microbiome analysis platform OneCodex. In this episode, we'll be talking about what OneCodex provides, how it came to be, and some practical considerations along the way. Thank you, Nick, for joining us. Like we said in the introduction, you founded OneCodex in 2014. You're no longer the CEO, but now the chairman of the board. Before I get to that, which I do want to ask you about, tell me what OneCodex is, what it has been, as if ATCC hasn't been working with OneCodex for the last few years.
Sure. Thanks, Dave. So OneCodex is a microbiome company, and I think that's how I would describe it today. The company was started really as a microbiome analysis company or microbiome data company in 2014. So the original vision for the company was we wanted to help folks answer the question of what's in complex microbial genomic samples, metagenomic samples, mixed genomic samples, and which bugs are present, which viruses are present, et cetera. That's evolved since to helping characterize isolate collections and single strains of microorganisms, to helping think about questions beyond simply taxonomic identity. So things like the functional profiling of what's going on within these samples, et cetera. But that was kind of always the original vision, was we wanted to build tools for scientists to get more leverage in working with pretty complex, very large scale data from mixed microbial samples. It's evolved a little bit more as well, in that now, started as a dry site company. We're really computational biologists and software folks exclusively for the first 7-8 years of the company history, through about 21. And then in 21, we launched a microbiome sequencing offering in partnership with a lab and a bunch of really great folks in Tennessee, and in partnership with Invitae, where ultimately we ended up for a little stint. And really since 21, we've become a little bit more of a full service microbiome company. And so that's why I say OneCodex is a microbiome company, in that today we help folks who are sending in physical samples, sending us stool in tubes, just to get really granular about it, all the way to folks who, have data that they've produced many years ago or produced recently, and they just want help with the analytics. And we have folks working with us kind of hand in hand on the bioinformatics side, and folks who work with us much more as a data platform, in the way that software engineers or computational folks might like to interact with something. So microbiome company end to end today, started as much more of a pure dry side operation for the first 6-7 years of the company life.
Speaking from experience, there's always a challenge with bioinformatics data analysis when it comes to the delivery to whoever the client may be or a customer may be. How does OneCodex tackle the challenges of the complications that is bioinformatics work with someone who may not be particularly expert in that kind of field?
Sure. So we've always wanted to kind of meet folks where they are, provide the right answers first and foremost, but also meet folks where they are. And so we've always thought at OneCodex about really a bunch of different types of users, ranging from the bench scientist who certainly is not fluent in a command line, and might not be that fluent with even some of the latest, what the latest statistical methods are for doing microbiome work, or the tools, or that landscape, really does not think of themselves as a dry side person. So you have kind of that archetype all the way at one end. And then, we work closely with folks who are, computational biologists, bioinformaticians, blending into software engineers and approach things much through that mindset. So we've always wanted to meet folks where they are, and on the one hand, build, a graphical user interface, a GUI that was easy to use to do kind of basic exploratory work. What's in my sample? What are the differences between a few samples? What are the differences between larger collections of samples or across cohorts? And do that interactively. But make all the same facilities available for someone to say, I have a question about 5,000 samples and I want to store and do analysis in a reproducible way on 5,000 samples. And I actually like help with the kind of infrastructure problem just as much as I'd like help with the, point and click, how do I browse around, how do I interact with the data problem. So I don't know if that answers your question, but we've kind of always thought about different folks across biology, from, you know, really in the weeds data folks all the way to very much at the bench, and trying to build things that work for those audiences. And sometimes it's different tools, but it's kind of the same underlying approach and infrastructure.
Yeah, I think that makes plenty of sense. I don't like most GUIs. I am a command line person. I do like one codexes. I've enjoyed using it. It's very clear. And your Python library is just as useful to me.
Okay, good. I was going to say, I hope the command line works for you as well.
I'm not going to knock that one. I use that far more often.
Which, as is the intent, right? I mean, I think, you know, and myself, like, obviously, much more of a software and data person, have a bias towards wanting to use tools through that same paradigm. You know, how do I do this at the command line? But at the same time, there's something very easy about opening up a web page and taking a quick visual glance at something that's, for certain things, much faster than firing up a Jupyter notebook and doing some interactive data analysis. You know, that's a 20-minute exercise at best, and the other one can be a 1-minute exercise. So I think there's value in providing both for all kinds of end users. And we've always been trying to focus on how to balance that.
Yeah, it makes sense. And speaking of values, there are a lot of different bioinformatics platforms available through the web with their own interfaces. You know, there's the Edge platform out of LANL. There's Galaxy Tools, has been around forever. How does one codex stay relevant in, you know, comparison to these?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we've always, this is partially kind of the founding bias and my own bias.
Of course.
And worldview and that software and data background and disposition. But I think we've always thought of ourselves as a little bit of a software shop or technology shop that has microbiology expertise, as opposed to the inverse, right? So as opposed to a company of microbiologists that are figuring out how to make software for other microbiologists. And that, you know, has all kinds of biases. I think in hopefully in our case, like, most have been like positive and good biases in terms of how we've approached and tried to solve the problem. But I would say in general, you know, we've wanted to be a platform that you can, to my prior point, that you can interact with through an API or a command line client or a GUI, and build it with kind of, you know, a little bit of California tech ethos and product quality and ease of use as a top of mind principle. And then also bring content to bear. And so I see that to me is kind of how we're different from, you know, the seven bridges and DNA nexuses and other kind of the other kind of abstract, I'm a genomics workflow manager tool platform, is we do provide that GUI and we do provide kind of pre-built workflows and analysis, including some proprietary ones for microbiome use cases. And then at the opposite end, you know, we're not just a collection of scripts to do microbiome work or kind of more ad hoc analysis. We do have that data infrastructure and that platform unifying everything. So that's kind of how we've always thought of what we do on the software side, is robust data engineering and kind of principles there and microbiome content, or microbiology content.
Yeah, it's interesting because user experience is so often an afterthought in these kinds of platforms, not to call out any in particular, but very frequently find that it's not as straightforward. And I, you know, luckily have not seen that kind of problem with the one codex. You can see it in your design philosophy, I think.
Well, and there's a lot of embedded complexity in the demand. So, mm-hmm. You know, to take the simplest example, and this isn't quite true, in that we do have some secret hatches for kind of like accessing additional complexity and configuration when they're appropriate. But for a very long time, none of our pipelines had any parameters that were user facing. So, you know, you would upload a FASTQ from Illumina or Oxford Nanopore, and under the hood, we would do our best to actually build a pipeline that worked generically across those different error profiles and read lengths and everything. But in some cases, that wasn't the right thing to do. But we wouldn't say, well, the user has to pass in a flag where they put in the string ONT to get the right behavior. And they have to know that flag is called platform, or it's called seek-platform, or, you know, it's called platform, but if you don't set that, it defaults to something. Like, there's a lot of embedded complexity. I mean, I think if you look at the, you know, you just do --help on, not calling out any tool specifically, but BWA or, you know, an assembler or any of these tools, they have sometimes not several options, but tens of options. And we've always wanted to keep things simple for end users and try to pick the right defaults and try to have the context and information to also impute what the right parameters and choices are. So that's always been kind of a core design philosophy, is like to get that complexity, that incidental complexity, away from the user, while not, you know, while leaving them empowered to do what they need to do and to provide a high quality result, but not kind of overwhelming them or deluging them with what are the seven flags you want to pass into your pipeline that you can also pass nonsensical combinations of.
Right. Plus the fairly significant chance that the changing of one flag or another, the tweaking of those parameters is, yeah, oftentimes not clear on the impact it'll have downstream. So even presenting that, yes, to the user is
very much, very much true. Yeah. Right. And I think, you know, the wonder of the bioinformatics ecosystem is there's a lot of incredible open source tooling that does very sophisticated, complex things. But it's also true that there's some rough edges, and some of that ecosystem is glued, is probably uncharitable, but like strung together in pipelines, and that complexity does not, you know, it's not like you have 2 7 parameter pipelines and all of a sudden you have a 14 parameter pipeline worth of complexity. You have 49 parameters worth of complexity. You know, these things are, there's a power law dynamic. And so, you know, I think we've tried to say, wherever we can, let's not get in the space of, hey, please configure these 32 parameters to run your pipeline. I think that's a fairly user hostile thing to do. And I think that limits your audience, like, to the very sophisticated end user. And for a certain end user, that's what they want. And you need to do that. But I don't think that's what the median biologist benefits from.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Going back at the top of the episode, we were saying that you have stepped away from being CEO and you've become the board chair for One Codex. So how does that differ to you, at least?
Well, quite a lot. So, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the circuitous story of how we got here. Yeah, so my day-to-day role now at One Codex is, you know, kind of an executive chair role. So I am involved in the company on a daily or weekly basis, certainly. But I'm not, you know, the general manager or CEO of the business. I'm not running things day-to-day. I exist kind of more in a helping with a few special projects in an applied way, and helping with strategy, you know, and helping us figure out, where do we want to take the company over the next few years? How do we execute on that? What are the product things we need to do? But also, you know, what are the sales and marketing activities that we need to engage in? Who do we need to be speaking to? How has the market changed over the last couple of years? Because it has quite a lot, both since COVID and before. And, you know, it's a 10-year company at this point. So at the beginning in 2014, there was no market. There was a nascent, but I think a little bit different market in 2016 and 17 from what really exists today. And now it's a bit different. And that's also reflected in, you know, the change in scope of our business as well, from pure play analysis to analysis plus sequencing lab offerings that are kind of bundled with the analytics and with the data delivery.
That does bring me to my next question. What were the early days like in 2014? You're just saying there wasn't really a market and it slowly got built, or you helped build the market itself. So what was that like at the beginning?
We started the company much too early. So from a market timing point of view, and I think entrepreneurs and founder types will have different answers to the question of, like, is it better to be too early or too late? I think it's better to be right on time. We were definitely too early. When we started the company, we, you know, had the insight that the amount of data being produced in microbial genomics applications was really exploding. Mm-hmm. Mostly analysis was being done on an ad hoc quite manual basis. And the production of people, the training of PhDs and postdocs that could do that work was not increasing, you know, super linearly. So, you know, the kind of founding insight of the business was simply there needs to be better automation. There needs to be better tooling. Basically, it needs to be easier to work with its data for it to achieve its full potential, both in research applications and in applied settings. How long would that take? What were the research applications? What were the applied applications? When would clinical come? You know, I think everyone in 2014 thought, oh, we'll be doing routine clinical sequencing, certainly by 2020 for microbiology. We're definitely not doing routine sequencing clinically for microbiology today. And I think a lot of people would have told you quite a bit earlier than that. So, you know, it's definitely been, the adoption curves have been slower. And the first few years we struggled to find customers and, you know, we'd call folks up at a biotech microbiome company, say someone doing live biotherapeutics. And they'd say, oh yeah, this sounds really great. Like we're going to have data from a first study in 3 months, call us back. And we call them back 2 months later. Or 6 weeks later or whatever, and say, okay, great. Where's the data? Like the data is still coming in 6 weeks. And they'd say, yeah, it's going to be coming in about three more months. And, you know, we had a stream of those, I would say over 2014, 15, 16, until we really found a core set of early customers who were kind of putting the reps in on producing data and therefore having the analytic challenges where we could support them. So that those were the early days. And, you know, we, the things that we did right are like, we didn't spend too much money and we were pretty frugal. And so we didn't run out of money and die. but I think like maybe we were a little less frugal or a little bit less attentive to that, or a little bit more of the mindset that certain venture-backed companies take of like, you know, you got to go to 100 or zero and try to get to one of those places as quickly as possible. We probably would have gotten to zero pretty quickly in 2015. So, you know, we had a more conservative approach and it ended up working out for us. But there was, you know, there's a bit of the, what Paul Graham calls the cockroach phase, right? Which is like, it's just important not to die. And that was a lot of like 2014, 15, and 16.
So did it finally feel real? Or did it feel real at all once it started to be more of what you might term a success?
Yeah.
Getting past the cockroach phase.
By 17 and 18, it was pretty clear that we were solving real problems for a small set of customers, not a huge market, but a small set of customers. We were having a meaningful impact on how they did business and how they did research. You know, one of our early customers that I can talk about was Vedanta Bioscience, who now has a couple assets in, you know, phase twos and threes, and we helped them with one of their first programs, starting from a from preclinical work, but then a phase one trial. And those were the kinds of folks that we eventually started working with in like 16. And you know, I think it was obvious that we were providing value by 17, mm-hmm. 18. And it was pretty clear that we were variously making a little bit of money or losing a little bit of money, but we weren't hemorrhaging money. And so it was clear that we were like a going concern, and that was very nice. And then, you know, I think those things felt better over 17, 18, 19. And we really felt like coming into that period, we had a really differentiated technology asset, you know, a decent business and a really good technology platform. It's kind of how we felt about the business around that time frame.
I think I'd like that more than a decent platform and a really good business.
Well, that's because you're a scientist. And like, yeah, me too. That's probably not the right instinct, I think, from as a business person, that's probably the wrong answer. As someone that's, you know, really motivated by solving the hard problems and the intellectual problems, like, yes, it's more satisfying. I'm not sure it's easier, but it can be more satisfying.
Yeah, probably not easier. So, before I let you go for this one, and again, thank you for your time. One Codex is clearly successful. You said tenure thus far. Do you have any project that One Codex has produced, client that you can talk about, customer you can talk about, that has been something you're particularly proud of, and you don't need to say the ATCC Genome Portal. But
I shouldn't plug the ATCC Genome Portal.
No, you're more than welcome to. But
I think, I think there are a few that I can talk about, and you know, I think where we feel very good, like Vedanta Bioscience, which I mentioned. I think we had a long running collaboration and working relationship with them over. I'd have to check if we really started working with them in 16. It might have even been the end of 15. It might have been the beginning of 17, but let's call it about 8 years. And kind of worked with them in thinking about everything from how do you characterize isolate collections that eventually might become a therapeutic to how do you measure if the therapeutic has been delivered successfully in a patient, whether it's colonized or engrafted, whether there are any kind of risks of that, dosing study questions, all these kinds of things. So like, I think that's been a wonderful collaboration, and where, you know, I can't say there's an FDA approved therapy yet that we had a small part in, but hopefully that's where that ends up. And I think that's something we'll feel very, very good about. Again, small role, but it's nice to even be a bit player there, you know. And then I think what we've done with ATCC, and a few others, but ATCC is kind of one of the more public collaborations, just in trying to make, again, like a relatively newer type of data that requires a relatively different type of skills to consume, a bit more accessible for a large audience, and hopefully, you know, helps people get their scientific day-to-day done a little bit more quickly and with a little bit more leverage. So, you know, we're really happy to be in a situation where we're helping other people get applications to market faster or with a higher chance of success or solve research problems a little bit more quickly. Like if we can increase the efficiency of any of that, I think we feel really good about it. And I think in measured domains, we've done that. So yeah, that part feels really great.
Well, it seems so far that the biological community and the general market agree with you. It has been a good contribution from your company. With that, I think we're out of time for this one. So again, Nick, thank you for joining us, and see you in the next one.
Perfect. Thanks, Dave.
OneCodex began as a data analysis platform for biologists to work with next-generation sequencing microbiome datasets, focusing on ease of use and the balance of different needs. Nick Greenfield has since transitioned from CEO to board member, and we explored the insights of how both he and OneCodex have changed in the last decade. Make sure to come back next week, where we'll get into how Nick produced a microbial analysis company despite no formal training in microbiology.